Hey everybody, what's going on? This is Ryan from the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. Welcome to the first installment of a new segment that I am calling Head Scratchers. This is a segment on which I will be talking about some albums, not necessarily brand new albums. They could be relatively new, as in within the last 2 years. They could even be albums that are older than that. Basically, the point of this segment is to explore some albums that I've had a lot of trouble sort of getting my head around, albums that I think might have been missteps, you know, on the part of the artists responsible for them. Early on in this podcast, I believe it was on the first episode that I ever recorded, I said that I enjoy when an album will sort of make me scratch my head the first time I listen to it. And now sometimes when that happens, an album will, you know, become one of my favorites upon repeated listens. But in other cases, albums will just continue to perplex me, to make me scratch my head, to make me wonder what was going on, you know, in the minds of the artists and the producer responsible for it. So that's the gist of this particular segment. So for the first installment, I'm going to talk about the album Sorceress by the band Opeth. This album was released on September 30th of 2016. It was produced by a guy named Tom Dalgetty. Here I go, mispronouncing names again, I'm sure. This producer has been known for working with bands like Ghost, the metal band Ghost, and also the Pixies. This is Opeth's 12th studio album, so that just goes to show you the sort of longevity that Opeth has had, and in particular, Michael Akerfeldt, since at this point, he's the only remaining original member of the group. So I got into Opeth in 2005, because it was before the album Ghost Reveries came out, which was their debut on Roadrunner Records. They had obviously released several albums before Ghost Reveries, but that was their Roadrunner debut, and I think it was some of their first major exposure as far as the States are concerned. I remember hearing a sample of the song called The Grand Conjuration, which is off Ghost Reveries, on iTunes. That's how I found out about Opeth. And I really enjoyed the song, but the edited version of the song, which they released as a single before the album came out, was, I think, about 4.5 minutes long. And I said to myself, man, I really like this song, but I wish it was longer. And sure enough, when I told my good friend Dan about how I just, you know, heard the song by this band called Opeth, you know, his eyes sort of lit up, you know, and he said, oh, they're a great band, you know, they're one of my favorites for sure. And I said, you know, I wish the song was longer. And he said, don't worry, I'm sure it will be. So when Ghost Reveries came out, of course, the album version of The Grand Conjuration is 10 minutes long, you know, like most tracks on that album. And I really fell in love with Ghost Reveries. And after, you know, getting accustomed to that album, then I sort of worked my way backwards through the several albums that Opeth had recorded before that. So I became very, enamored with records like Blackwater Park and Still Life. I wasn't too crazy about the first couple of albums that Opeth made. I feel like they were sort of, you know, finding their sound like most bands do on their first record or their first couple of records. So, but, you know, they were always, always quality songwriters, always came up with, you know, interesting stuff. So then after, you know, Ghost Reveries came out, you know, obviously a couple years later, there was the album Watershed, which, you know, signaled in a lot of ways a different direction that Opeth was going in, less of a metal direction, more of a sort of proggy, sort of occasionally jazzy and bluesy direction. And I enjoyed Watershed very much, too. And then on the next album they released, which was called Heritage, it was like full on just proggy exploration. There were no more, you know, sort of death, you know, Cookie Monster growl vocals. It was full on prog. There was a lot less distortion in the guitar sounds. And a lot of people, sort of had a negative reaction to that record. And I can understand that. But I embraced it. I liked it very much. And the album that followed that, which was called Pale Communion, I felt was a pretty solid continuation of that exploration. I feel like, you know, on Heritage, Opeth really were going somewhere, And by the time they got to Pale Communion, they had sort of arrived at this place that they wanted to be. So I thought that was a pretty good album too. And now comes Sorceress, which I just am having an extremely hard time just figuring this album out. So I'm just going to start right at the top. We'll go track by track. All right, so the first track in the album, which is called Persephone, is, you know, an acoustic piece, which is, you know, pretty typical of Opeth. It's really not any surprise. It's pretty, you know, there's I can't really say that it's a bad piece of music. You know, it's pleasing, but it's nothing new. We've heard this before. You know, I mean, they did the Opeth did their Damnation album, which was a sister album to their album Deliverance, and you know, Damnation was mainly an acoustic record. So fans of Opeth, you know, we know this side of Opeth. We've heard this before. So the song itself, the music in Persephone isn't bad, but there's this sort of emotionless female spoken word vocal that comes in that just rubs me the completely wrong way. It just sounds very, very emo to me. It just reminds me of something that I would hear from, you know, like a early 2000s screamo song from, you know, one of those countless number of bands that were pretty much all the same. And it just really turns me off. So right off the bat, I had sort of a negative reaction to Persephone. But so then Persephone segues into the track Sorceress, title track of the record. And Sorceress starts off with a little over a minute's worth of this sort of bluesy, jazzy intro that to me is just completely unnecessary and also incongruous, because it doesn't fit with what came before it on Persephone, and it does not fit with what comes after it, which is the meat of the track, Sorceress, which is, you know, a sort of a slow burner, a very just a very driving sort of bluesy metal song. And it's sort of reminiscent to me, the heavy parts of the track Sorceress. It reminds me of the track Blackwater Park off of the album Blackwater Park. So they sort of, you know, they're throwing me for a loop here. They're giving me this intro that doesn't really fit with the rest of it. And it sort of seems like they're kind of throwing anybody a bone who was really into that sort of, you know, bluesy and jazzy, like prog that they were doing on Heritage and even somewhat on Pale Communion. But, you know, that's not really the basis of Sorceress, this album. So I'm very sort of perplexed as to the motivation of putting that intro in there. It just doesn't work for me. I think if it wasn't in there, I wouldn't miss it. And I highly doubt that many people would. So that could have just been left off the record as far as I'm concerned. But like I said, the song itself is heavy and it's catchy. It has a very interesting middle section, I thought. It reminds me of, you know, the sort of Ghost Reveries era Opeth. So that was a plus for me. So once Sorceress gets going, it's not a bad track at all. So, and then after that track, the album moves into the track The Wild Flowers, spelled WILDE. Not really sure what the motivation was for that, but this isn't a bad song either. I really like the build in this song. It uses a sort of classic Opeth song structure, which has a break in the middle, which was, you know, probably absolutely necessary when Opeth were typically writing 10-minute tracks. So I like that it has that's sort of a throwback to, you know, to their old sound. And the only thing that really bothers me about this track is that on the very end, you know, they sort of go for the same like epic conclusion that they used on tracks like The Grand Conjuration from Ghost Reveries and Blackwater Park, but it just doesn't, they don't pull it off here. You know, it's kind of a muddled mess as far as the sound, and it just doesn't feel necessary, really. So, I mean, it's just kind of, to me, it's a little bit out of place, and it almost seems a little bit cliched or kind of just like a gimmick. You know, it's like they're kind of treading the same ground there. So that didn't really work for me. But besides that, you know, the track isn't bad. I actually like it. So after The Wildflowers, we move into the track Will O' the Wisp, Which, much like the opener, Persephone, we've heard this before. It's a very pretty, sort of easy to listen to, acoustic based song with some pleasant Michael Akerfeld vocals over it. It's nothing new, and it's not really a good or a bad track as far as I'm concerned. I'm indifferent to it. Perhaps if there had been less, of these sort of acoustic based like interludes or if you will, on this album, I might have enjoyed Will-O-The-Wisp more. I would have maybe thought that it, fit better onto the record, but it just seems to drag things down to me, and it's really unfortunate for a band that can be, Opeth can be a pretty exciting band, so to just have this sort of stop and go, kind of sluggish Opeth is just it's disappointing. So, but from Will-O-The-Wisp, we move into the track Chrysalis, which to me is the best track on the album. This is the sound on this song that should have dominated this record. It's the most interesting sound, and this is also the most focused song on the entire album too. Chrysalis just keeps moving. It's busy enough, but it doesn't overstep, any sort of bounds. It's a little bit proggy at times, but it's just enough, and it was just a welcome change for me when I got to it, the first time I listened to this album. So, all right, so after Chrysalis, which, like I said, I would peg as probably the best track on this album, we move into Sorceress 2. I am not a fan of sequels when it comes to songs. I don't know where that comes from, but it just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't jive with me. But anyway, the song itself, it just totally kills the momentum that was created by the track before it. Now, I actually think that if they had just left the opening track, Persephone, off the album and used this track as the opener for the album and just changed the name, I think it would have worked a lot better. I think, the fact that it has the sort of haunting vocals from Akerfeld on it, along with the acoustic passages, just would make it a better opener. I mean, opening track off of the album Watershed, which is called Coil, I thought was a great opener. Where it was similar, in the fact that it was acoustic and it had vocals that were both Michael Akerfeld, and then there was a female guest on that too. I thought that that was a great opener. I thought that that worked really well. So, yeah, putting Sorceress 2, like I said, as the opener, just would have worked much, much better in my eyes. So, and after Sorceress 2, we move into the track The Seventh Sojourn, or Sojourn, however you want to say it. Now, here we have an acoustic track, but it's actually very, very exciting. This track reminds me very much of a track called The Throat of Winter that had been featured on, I think it was one of the soundtracks for one of the God of War games. Similar sound to this one, and this is the kind of thing that keeps the momentum rolling. If this track had come right after Chrysalis, there would have been no problem. The sort of steamroller would have just kept moving. There would have been no bump in the road. So I think this is a great one. I think that the sort of mostly acoustic, epic sounding Seventh Sojourn is a really good segue. If it was right after Chrysalis, I think it would have just kept, like I said, kept the flow of the album going. And then on this roller coaster ride of an album, we get to the track Strange Brew, which I really only have one word to describe this track, and it's mess. To me, none of its parts are very memorable. When I think of this album, there's parts from the different songs that stick out in my head. Now, Strange Brew is, something like 8 minutes long, and none of the parts ever come to my mind. It's almost like I have some sort of, induced amnesia when it comes to this track. It's just it's not focused at all. If you look at a track like Chrysalis, and then you look at a track like Strange Brew, it's like night and day. And you know what? Opeth has done these sort of multi-part epic tracks before. They were doing it for, so many of their albums, pre-Heritage, and they were able to keep focus, like few bands I've ever heard before. And even on Heritage, there's a track called Famine, which sort of experimented with the same sort of structure, I think, that Strange Brew has. But Famine was far more memorable to me. So this is just a case, I think, of the songwriting not being as strong on Sorceress as it was on something like Heritage or even, you know, the last album, Pale Communion. So it's really too bad that, you know, the Seventh Sojourn sort of picked everything up, you know, for this album, as far as, you know, just the excitement level, and then Strange Brew just completely killed it for me. But since I am an Opeth fan and I have a lot of respect for them, I persevered. So from Strange Brew, we move into the track A Fleeting Glance. Now, A Fleeting Glance is a pretty good track. I like it. It has a nice balance of those sort of folky acoustic elements that Opeth are famous for, but it's balanced with this interesting sort of 60s psychedelic sound that they've noodled with a little bit in the past, but I think they showcase it pretty well on this track. I actually think that this track could have been the closer for the album. I think that this would have been the right note to go out on. Unfortunately, they didn't do that. The next track, which is called Era, is sort of technically it's the climax of the album. It's not the last track, but it's the climax of the album. But unfortunately, Era just feels very insubstantial to me. It has this weird sort of like 80s hard rock vibe. Like, it sounds like a song that I would have heard on a 80s, you know, movie soundtrack, like one of those inspirational, like, you know, Stan Bush songs or something. Something that would be used in a training montage in a Rocky movie or something. Really, it's just it comes down to the fact that Opeth are better than this. They really are. I think they're just way, this track is just, I don't like to use the term lazy, but I really think that this track is lazy. And it's the only track, really, besides the opener, Persephone, and then the closer, which is a reprise, basically, of Persephone, that feel like filler. And Opeth are not, it's not typical for there to be filler on Opeth albums. They're solid, typically, all the way through. So it's really unfortunate, you know, that it's sort of gotten to this point. So, right, so the last track is a reprise, basically, of Persephone, again, with the sort of hollow-sounding, emotionless female vocals over, you know, a piano this time instead of based on acoustic guitar. And it's unnecessary. I really think they don't need either this one or the opener. Yeah, so that brings me to the end of Sorceress. And I think this album is going to continue to perplex me. I was very surprised when I looked at the Metacritic score for this album online. It received an 81 out of 100, which is, you know, considered universal acclaim. It's on the border between universal acclaim and then the next lowest level, which is generally favorable. But I just, to me, this album is it's a C, maybe a C plus. So the fact that it's, you know, that's getting these sort of positive reviews all across the board, I don't really understand it. I mean, I always see a lot of potential in Opeth material, even if I don't necessarily think the finished product is up to snuff. But I really hope that they sort of get back on track with whatever, you know, the next album that they're going to work on. Because I think that, you know, even though they moved in a direction that a lot of their diehard fans weren't happy with, when they sort of took out a lot of the, you know, the more metal elements and, you know, went more prog and a little bit more, like I said, bluesy and jazzy. I enjoy the album Heritage and the album Pale Communion. I think that they're good albums, and I think there's definitely room for Opeth to grow, you know, in that sort of progressive vein. So I'm not saying I want them to return to the sound they had on, you know, something like Ghost Reveries or Blackwater Park. I don't think that would really be a good thing to do. I think those albums have had their time. The songwriting just needs to be more interesting to me. That's the problem. And, you know, if they can't do that, unfortunately, I feel like I'm going to continue to lose interest in what Opeth does. And I really don't want that to happen because I have a very deep connection with a lot of their music. So I don't even really feel like I can give Sorceress a rating. That's part of the reason why I'm calling this segment Head Scratchers. I don't really know. Like I said, there's elements of this album I like, but the elements that detract from my enjoyment of it outweigh, you know, the positive factors, unfortunately. So I can't really give it a rating, but I'd be very interested in hearing what other people think of it. If you think I'm completely nuts, please let me know, and we'll talk about it. So thank you for listening to this segment, and catch up with me again soon. I will be releasing episode 5. I'm losing count. Episode 5 of Radio Live Transmission, the standard format episode, later this month. Alrighty, so thank you very much and have a good night.